For years I've been interviewing State Representative Phil Montgomery. Well, that's no longer the case. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Public Service Commission Chairman Phil Montgomery. After 12 years in the State Assembly representing Ashwaubenon, now January you took a new job as chairman of the Public Service Commission. Congratulations.
In April 6th.
I was off by a little bit.
That's
but
okay.
Still, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Well, you went from the political side in the Capitol 12 years to the Public Service Commission. How big of a transition, how big of a change is that, Phil?
It's huge. It is, it really is.
It's a good thing, but you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a big change nonetheless. You get into the nuts and bolts over here, whereas a lot of times when we were dealing with legislation, we would come with an overall policy direction that we wanted to go, and then we would send it to the various agencies to bring it down to the nuts and bolts. Unfortunately, or fortunately, a number of pieces of legislation that I passed as a legislator have come over here now.
You now have to implement.
I now have to put together the rules for them.
How did you do on the other side of Madison?
I've had a little fun with that and cursing the legislators in referencing myself.
Well, Public Service Commission, that's not a partisan job, right? Have you had to
it
check?
It is not, no.
Have you had to check your R at the door?
I have, and that's a great thing. It is as the title implies, our job is the ratepayers and the public of the state of Wisconsin, that we are viewed as the experts on both energy and telecommunications, and that's a great role, and I commend my other commissioners. I replaced Senator Mark Meyer, who I served with in the legislature. First of all, the folks out here that I've had an opportunity to work with now for over a month are extremely professional, very dedicated, and just have a wealth of knowledge.
Well, you made a decision to no longer serve in the Assembly.
Yeah.
So you didn't know what the future held. I mean, you wouldn't be here if Governor Walker hadn't been elected. When you decided to not seek re-election in the Assembly, you thought you might do what?
You know, it was a wonderful opportunity for me in May in the fact that my wife has a career as well. And we based the decision just on it was right for us as a family to look forward. So I really did not have a next thing lined up or where I was going next. I then purposely waited to see what the election results were. When Governor Walker won, I put my name forward. So I believe the Lord has a plan for us all. He just shows us to us a day at a time.
Okay. Now you started in April.
Yep.
You just got confirmed by the State Senate for a 6-year term.
So Woo-hoo!
let me ask this question: sure. What do you see as the major issues for the Public Service Commission over your next 6 years?
Well, I wish it was just a one.
Right,
you know,
there's
several. The fact that we regulate three different entities: energy policy, telecommunications, and water. So, first of all, on energy, I believe we are extremely well positioned as a state in terms of our generating diversity and capability. In the late 90s, we experienced some reliability issues where companies were having to brown out a little bit
right.
Because we did not have enough generation. We embarked on the Power of the Future building initiative that built quite a bit of capacity in the state. What we did not anticipate at that time was that we would come out of that building program in the midst of one of the greatest economic downturns in a number of generations.
The recession.
So what you have is about a 30% overcapacity to generate power versus the need. And so what our job here at the Public Service Commission is to ensure going forward that the ratepayers reap the benefits of that building program as demand grows, not only in our state, but as a member of what is called the Midwest Independent System Operators. we are no longer an island of a state, nor are we an island onto each utility. Every day, each utility throughout the state and throughout the Midwest bids into a power market that stretches now from Texas to Manitoba, to Minnesota, over to Ohio. And this organization asks for power from different producers. So it's a much different arena than it was even, you know, 10 years ago. And so what we have to do as a commission is, again, the ratepayers that have paid for these assets that have been built are very well positioned in the fact that we have some of the latest and greatest technology and a very good diversity from where we can draw that power from. So as the economy improves, as the demand improves, I think we're extremely well positioned.
But right now we have 30% overcapacity,
correct.
Commissioner?
Now, the thing
that's something that the ratepayers are now paying for, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and so first of all, you have to put that in perspective. You want about a 15 to 18% overcapacity so that you're never, you know, running right at the edge, okay? 30% is a little bit high, but what that enables us to do is you probably won't see a building of a lot of new generation for quite some time. Almost all the utilities in the state are very well positioned for at least the next 10 years.
Okay, well, what about rates? I mean, do you foresee any major upper in rates over the next 6-10 years, or slow increase or decrease?
Well, what you have to come to understand here is, again, is the number of components that go into making a rate. Again, first you have fuel cost. You have a number of different things that go into that. One thing that I would say that what we're been working on here at the Public Service Commission is focus on energy. Focus on energy and a number of other programs that no matter what the price of the energy is, if you work on your consumption of it, you can affect your own price by keeping you know, how much you use down.
Dialing that down.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so you aren't looking for any major uppers in rates over the next few years or major drops?
Again,
you think it'll be stable for both commercial?
I do. Again, just the fact that we do have so much capacity bodes well. I think that one thing that's happening on a nationwide scale is the discovery of new natural gas reserves. The price of natural gas is about $5 per decatherm. And that relates to a number of other things, is when you're looking at what fuels you're going to burn and what mix, you know, obviously the price comes into play. And so, you know, natural gas was in the $11 to $12 a decatherm, you know, less than 6 to 8 years ago. With the basically a doubling of our natural gas capacity, that brings a whole new dynamic and a good one, I think, in terms of stability of rates.
In the Capitol, you were part of the very controversial debate over the renewable standards.
Yeah.
Our current standard is what?
10% by 2015.
10% by 2015.
Yep.
And former Governor Doyle wanted to take that up, and there were some Democrats that wanted to take that up.
Yeah,
and
they wanted to go to 25% by 25, but starting at as early as 2012, I think, going to 13%. I can't remember how it ratcheted up, but it was if not a doubling, more of the current standard.
Where are we now?
Yeah. Where we are now is most of the generators or most of the utilities have met that standard. We only have, I think, one, if not two, that are well on their way within 10 to 15% of meeting the overall goal. So I believe that we are going to be able to achieve it. The thing that you have to keep in mind, again, is when you have 30% overcapacity with your current mix, mm-hmm. It is tough to add new generation of any form when you're already oversupplied. And so that's one of the things that we're having to deal with.
Covering the Capitol now, I don't hear anybody saying we should have a 25% standard by 25, correct?
Yeah, correct.
You don't believe that, right?
No.
Okay.
Not that I've heard of.
Okay, and you don't think we should adjust it upward just because of what you just said? We're dealing with 30% overcapacity right now?
Yeah, again, a lot of what we're dealing with is called demand side management. Again, what can we do as a state to not look at, again, the generation end of it, but what can we do to control the usage? You know, what are the conservation efforts that we can all adopt, both as businesses and as individuals, to use less power? That's a very powerful tool that we have at our disposal. And again, you can achieve great results with that without a government mandate.
In this room, there are hundreds of hours of discussion over the wind turbine standard,
yeah,
and how far wind turbines should be set back from homes and other development.
Yeah,
there was one standard that was recommended, then there was an election and it changed.
Yeah.
What's your position on that?
Well, it's that the policy that is set by the administrative branch and the legislative branch, mm-hmm, we then are tasked with coming up with the rules to follow their direction. And so they have looked at that. Again, a new administration comes in, and they are exploring all the different possibilities. What my job is to help them get to a standard that follows their policy direction. And so my thoughts on it are very simple, and it actually mirrors what I've looked at it before, is whatever the standard is, I believe it should be a statewide standard. I don't believe that we should have 72 counties out there with 72 different standards, or 3,500 municipalities, each with their own standard. I believe energy policy is a state-driven policy. So again, where the legislature, where the executive branch comes up with a policy direction, we will help to implement that.
Now, Governor Walker recommended, isn't it a 1,500-foot standard?
I don't know where he was at. Again, pick a number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever number is picked in the Capitol, it's your job to make sure that's workable.
Well, it's not necessarily to make it workable. What our job is to articulate the details of what goes into that number. Yeah. Okay. If you have this number, we can tell you, with the engineers, with everyone else that we have out here, what are the ramifications of that number? Then as policymakers, they have the ability to take that information and say, oh, well, okay, now that we know that, you might change a number, you might change something else. Again, you may look at the overall policy of that. But again, that's what our job is I view us as a regulatory body of the expertise of the engineering and all the other aspects that assist the policymakers in setting that direction.
You are not recommending any number to the Capitol and the governor and his team, right?
No, we put one number out, again, to the rulemaking, that was the process of Act, not one, was it part of 141? Anyway, we were asked to set a number. We went through a very detailed rulemaking process,
yes,
came up with a number. The policymakers chose to go in a different direction,
right,
as is their prerogative.
Yeah.
And so once they have signaled that to us, what our reply has been is, we will work with you to the nth detail to get you to a policy position that works.
Critics said, though, that the new number that the Walker team came up with is going to kill the wind energy industry in Wisconsin. Do you have any response to their criticism?
Well, again, what you have to look at is, how much does it cost you to generate a megawatt of electricity? Okay, you can generate it by wind, you can generate it by coal, nuclear power, you can conserve. So there are a number of different issues out there. If you look around the nation, the fact that you can buy natural gas, which is a very clean burning fuel, mm-hmm, at $5 a decatherm, has made people like T. Boone Pickens, who had over 1,000 windmills ordered for West Texas, to say, it's no longer economically viable for me to pursue that project when I can buy natural gas at that price. So there are a number of things that come into that decision. I don't believe that, again, I believe that the Walker administration and the legislature is working very diligently on moving forward and coming up with a statewide policy that will enhance, again, people's ability to generate power, whether it by wind or any other thing. So again, their policy decisions was not the death knell of anything.
The telecom bill just passed the Senate and the Assembly.
Yeah.
It's on the governor's desk. Why is that a good thing, Phil?
The last one was written in 1994.
Okay.
Think about that. 1994, we didn't have Blackberries, we didn't have Blueberries, we didn't have internet on our phone.
Smartphones, iPads.
Yeah, tweets, Facebook, and everything else. And so I applaud them for being as forward-thinking as they are in that what we are setting ourselves up as is a state that recognizes that we need to keep up with technology, and that's what I think this bill does.
Lawmakers from rural areas said, look, nobody's going to build out to our areas. We're not going to get broadband. What's the key to getting broadband to the rural areas of the state of Wisconsin?
Again, go up to Camp Douglas, a community of, I think, about 2,000 people. Lemonware Cooperative is the phone company up there. They are actually providing fiber optic to the home, which is huge. That is the fastest that you can accomplish. So there are instances where we have had tremendous success in rural areas with getting the access that is needed to areas. We also have isolated pockets, some as close here in Dane County, that are having trouble getting the capacity that they need. What's happening right now at both the federal level and the state level is an examination of what is called the Universal Service Fund. And the Universal Service Fund is a portion of the bill that everyone pays that goes into to providing right now telephone access to everyone throughout the state. Well, as we define access as more than just a telephone, we're having to come up with the policy decisions, the rules, and everything else as to what does that entitle those changes. And so that's where we are right now. Both the federal government is looking at it. We have a docket open on it here at the state level. And so we will work with policymakers to ensure that everyone has access to the tools that they need.
Well, one of those pockets, though, may be in Senator Vinehout's area, because she said, you know, she's from Alma, lots of hills. This telecom bill is not going to help my area. What about those pockets of Wisconsin? How long until those rural pockets can get some broadband service?
Again,
are we talking years?
Right. Again, what this policy, what the legislation that passed today is again, one component of, I believe, getting the highest, best performing, best price out to all areas of the state, because it frees up the free enterprise system to do what they do best. If you look at the explosive growth of both the wireless industry and of the internet, it has been because it has had the lightest regulatory touch. So if you look at the explosive growth, if you look at the penetration of both those markets, mm-hmm. again, you couldn't replicate that in any other model. It is doing tremendous. That doesn't mean that there are not pockets. What, again, that is the role of the Universal Service Fund,
right,
that this bill had nothing to do with, okay? And so Senator Vinehout, again, we're more than happy to work with her and to others. And again, this is being addressed at both the national level and the state level as to define, okay, you have pockets that, whether due to geography or whether to the natural formations, you have trouble getting services in there. Well, first of all, you have to define what is the proper amount of service, and at what is a reasonable cost. And so those are policy items that are being debated that are again completely separate from the bill that was just passed.
Okay.
But the big thing to take away, those areas are not being forsaken, okay, by any means. Not by the bill or not by this agency or not by the administration or policymakers. We understand that there are areas of the state that need, again, fine-tuning. But it doesn't mean that in any means we've abandoned them or that it's not being addressed.
What is this? What does the PSC owe Wisconsin's poorest residents, which do pay some of these rates for electricity and
what do we
owe the poor citizens, the PSC? I mean, how does it help those?
Does it help?
How does the PSC? Sorry, I asked my question.
That's
poorly.
Okay.
How does the PSC help?
I wasn't sure that I had to pay the folks to.
The PSC help our poorest ratepayers?
Oh, that's a great question. There are a number of ways that we help the ratepayers. One is through our education. We have a number of different education programs that help everyone conserve. Again, when you are conserving and using less of whatever it is, that's the best way that we can help you to insulate yourself from any price fluctuations. Mm-hmm. Next is advocacy. We make sure that it is a level playing field, that the consumer has tools to address issues that are before them. We view ourselves as the experts, and we stand and make sure they are aware of the various avenues that they have to address issues before them.
So you think, even though you've only been on the job a few weeks, the PSC does do enough to help the poorest ratepayers?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yes.
The era of smartphones, iPad 1, iPad 2, what do you think telecom looks like in 5 or 6, 10 years from now?
I have no clue. I would say this. I would say that as we have witnessed an exponential increase, not a linear increase in the technology, but an exponential leap, that those time frames continue to be condensed. That again, where we went from the bag phone to a cell phone to a BlackBerry was what, a 5 to 7 to 10 year period. That's going to be condensed down to where again it ramps up in a shorter period of time. One of the things that is a great initiative that's happening both at the state and federal level is something that's remarked as smart grid. And what smart grid is going to allow the consumer to do with the technology devices that we have out there to control your heating and cooling from your phone by dialing into your home. And again, it's not dialing in, it is communicating with your home to set your heating and
furnace.
Cooling, perhaps turn your stove on so that it is ready when you get home, to do your wash, say, at a time of day where the rates are the lowest. That again, when we all get home at 5 o'clock, we turn on the news, we turn on the stove, we maybe start a load of wash. Well, when everybody does that at the same time, that creates a spike in demand. Well, when you have more demand, the price goes up with that. When you have 3 o'clock in the morning and no one is doing these things, if that's the time to do your laundry and you can save money doing that, that's what this smart grid will allow you to do. And again, that's part of our role, is to educate customers and to set up policy and regulations that allow consumers, generators, and businesses to take advantage of those economies of scale that says, hey, if you do your wash at 3 o'clock in the morning, or if you produce a Harley at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's better for all of us.
In the Assembly, you were the sponsor of the cable deregulation bill.
Yep.
Has that worked?
It has. If you go out on the internet today and check the providers, just here in the Madison area, you can get up to, I believe it's 80 megabytes of speed, which is fantastically fast. Mm-hmm. And so where you look at the effects of competition, it has many components. One of them, again, is the availability of technology that you have access to 80 megabytes. You have access to, again, I don't understand it, but if you want 800 channels, you can get 800 channels. Again, there are a number of aspects to that, but I would say yes, it has succeeded very well.
Does the cable industry have a future given cloud technology that's now?
It's funny because while they have the name cable and other companies have the name phone, what the heck is a cable anymore, and what the heck is a phone? You know, so very few people anymore.
It's a blurring of those lines.
It's a blurring. It is the delivery of information using various technologies. And so I think that, again, that's one of the benefits of this, is that not only that bill, but again, the current legislation that's before the governor, realizes that there has been that blurring of the lines, and that the regulatory regimes that was silos that segmented and defined doesn't it take place in the marketplace of today.
Current Wisconsin law, as you know, prohibits any new nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
Do you think that prohibition should be repealed, or in light of what we learned since the Japan accident, have you changed your position?
Not at all. Again, in light of the Japan, the Fukushima, yes. One of the first things I did was we have a tremendous asset here in the state of Wisconsin. His name is Dr. Michael Corandini. He is the head of nuclear engineering over at the UW. He serves on a number of the national regulatory safety and nuclear power engineering bodies at the federal level, and in fact has testified on this situation before Congress. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously what you want to take from it are, what do we need to do to ensure our regulatory regime and safety ideas are in line to prevent that from happening here?
Yes.
Which I believe they are. But more importantly, what you have to get it back to is, again, the Public Service Commission, when we are given a case to build any type of new generation, we go through an exhaustive examination of the needs, the ability to create that power, the ability to conserve that power. So we have a palette of tools that we could use, okay? We will use those no matter what the technology. If a windmill is proposed, mm-hmm. a coal-fired plant, mm-hmm. a nuclear power plant, a water plant, we have the tools to decide that with all the safety, the environment, the cost, the reliability, all the things that go into making those decisions. We do not need an additional layer of bureaucracy on top of that saying, well, but look real hard at this one. We will. We already have that ability.
Do you see any new nuke plants being built in Wisconsin over the next 10 or 20 years?
No. No.
Why? Because the
capacity.
Capacity.
Yeah, capacity.
Okay.
It just, again, that we're out to at least 2020 or further with excess capacity. Again, I just don't see the need. And again, that takes us full circle back to where we start. We are extremely well positioned as a state in terms of our generating capabilities.
And then you mentioned the final area that the PSC has jurisdiction of is water rates.
Yes.
What do you think is going to happen with water rates over the next 6 years?
Well, there's a couple things that need to happen. One is conservation. While we have been blessed with access, to both Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, we have to look at a smarter use of a very finite resource. That we have to make sure that our conservation efforts are in line, with the ability to produce water.
Mm-hmm.
The next part that we have to look at is the amount of energy that is used to produce a gallon of drinking water. There are great economies of scale and a lot of conservation efforts that need to take place. I believe there's 577 water utilities throughout the state. They use things that, such as pumps and different processes to clean up both the drinking water and the wastewater. What can we take from our energy hats and conservation and make sure that the entities that are producing water are producing it with the best energy usage? So that's a combination of the two.
Water rates, are they going to stay fairly stable, do you think? Are they going to shoot up because of some of these issues?
Yeah, again, water rates, I don't have a feel yet. I couldn't really tell you yet. But again, I think that just as we'd said with electricity, best thing that you could be doing as a consumer, either as a business or a homeowner, is conservation.
You sound like you're glad you made the jump from the
politics of the... I've been blessed. The staff out here, my fellow commissioners, it is a very well-run organization. And it is one of those unique things that when an individual is blessed to come to work in the morning and love what they do, that's where I find myself.
Public Service Commission Chairman Phil Montgomery, thanks
for
your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you. My pleasure.